Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling is a live call-in radio program providing doctrinal dialogue, cultural commentary, and insightful interviews with some of today's foremost Christian authors and leaders. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship in Travelers Rest. The goal of the church and the radio program is to seek the glory of God in the salvation of sinners and the sanctification of the saints by the ministry of the Word. For more information, go to www.knowingthetruth.org. Here with today's edition of Knowing the Truth is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome into this edition of the Knowing the Truth radio program. This is Pastor Kevin Bowling. So glad that you joined us on the broadcast today. Well, what do you think? Will Donald Trump destroy climate data? Well, that's what the Washington Post appears to think in the continuing saga of the hysteria, post-election hysteria that is taking place over the Donald Trump election. It's happened in a number of other regions or spheres, and this time it's in the energy and environment sphere. The headline in yesterday morning's Washington Post says this: scientists are frantically copying U.S. climate data, fearing it might vanish under Trump. The article then goes on to say, alarmed that decades of crucial climate measurements could vanish under a hostile Trump administration, scientists have begun to feverish attempt to copy reams of government data onto independent servers in hopes of safeguarding it from any political interference. The efforts include, quote, guerrilla archiving, unquote, event taking place in Toronto, where experts will copy irreplaceable public data. Meetings at the University of Pennsylvania focused on how to download as much federal data as possible in the coming weeks, and a collaboration of scientists and database experts are compiling an online site to harbor scientific information. Quote, something that seemed a little paranoid to me before all of a sudden seems potentially realistic, or at least something you'd want to hedge against, unquote, said Nick Santos, an environmental researcher at the University of California, Davis, who over the weekend began copying government climate data onto a non-government server where it will remain available to the public. Quote, doing this can only be a good thing. Hopefully they will leave everything in place, but if not, we're planning for that, unquote. In recent weeks, President-elect Donald Trump has nominated a growing list of cabinet members who have questioned the overwhelming scientific consensus around global warming. His transition team at the Department of Energy has asked agency officials for names of employees and contractors who have participated in international climate talks and worked on the scientific basis for Obama administration's era regulations of carbon emissions. One Trump advisor suggested that NASA no longer should conduct climate research and instead should focus on space exploration. Well, there's a number of things in this article that I'd love to discuss. Maybe we'll talk about a couple of these things. One, right off the top, I'm thinking, is it legal to be downloading all of this government information onto private servers? I thought that this was the whole point and a part of the Hillary thing, you know, that there was government data. It belongs to the people, the American people, and to be taking that data and downloading it onto private servers could be a problem. Now, that was in the State Department, so maybe it's not as much of a problem here. The second thing that surprises me in this article as well is the obvious hysteria over Donald Trump and the idea that he's going to be out there deleting people's data off their drive. But when I look at this, I think, self-evident, you know, what is taking place in their view about climate change and all of the negative ramifications? if it's self-evident, then why do we have like this, you know, this secret data that's out there that needs to be protected by these people that are going out downloading this and dumping it onto other servers? Here to talk about all these things is Charles Clough. He was an atmospheric physicist. He's a retired chief of U.S. Army Atmospheric Effects Team at Aberdeen Proving Ground. He's also a retired lieutenant colonel in the U.S. Air Force and their weather officer there. He's the president of Biblical Framework Ministries and an adjunct professor at, I think it's Chafer Theological Seminary in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Dr. Clough, it's a pleasure to have you on the Knowing the Truth radio program today.
So thank you. I'm not a doctor. I have 2 graduate degrees, but not a PhD.
Well, I give them away here on the broadcast left and right, so I'll give you an honorary one to be on the program. I left off the fact, too, that you are a fellow, right, with the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation.
That's correct.
And so you do writing for them as well, research and writing for the Cornwall Alliance?
Yes.
Okay. I wanted to get your take on this news story here. Let me just let you just comment on the part of the story that I read from the Washington Post.
Well, there is a question about copying government data. As a matter of fact, I was asked by some state senators here in the state of Maryland to see if I could obtain some of the weather data from Aberdeen Proving Ground that I helped them gather before my retirement. And I was told by the government that I would need a FOIA or agreement for Freedom of Information Act in order to get that data. So I don't think it's quite that easy to copy from a .gov to some private server without permission. So that's the first thing that has to be thought about. Second, I think it's ludicrous on the part of the Washington Post when we have cases where NASA and NOAA have manipulated the surface temperature data and done it without any oversight. Mm. So they've been tampering with the data, not Mr. Trump.
Mm-hmm. You know, the basic premise here is that there's going to be a marked difference between the way that these things were thought about and handled under the Obama administration versus the way that they're going to be handled under the Trump administration. Do you accept that premise, that there's going to be a major difference in the two ways that these will be, that climate in general will be viewed by the two administrations?
There probably will be. I can't judge the Trump situation because I don't know the inner workings of what they're thinking about. But it seems that way from the surface. But you have to remember, we've got to zoom out and look at the big picture here of climate. There's been a big ongoing momentum, a powerful momentum among politicians and the science community to advocate for a gargantuan international effort to end fossil fuel usage and CO2 emissions. That's the big picture.
Mm-hmm.
And that picture has been fostered by basically 3 powerful ideas. The first idea is that, and we can think of this as Christians, there's a religious component to a lot of this extreme environmentalism. And that is that nature is more valuable than man.
Hmm.
And that is a direct violation of the Christian doctrine that man is made in God's image and only man is made in God's image. So there's a reversal. And I have pictures of college students on their knees in New York City worshiping a nature idol at one of these environmental things. So the idea that nature is more valuable than man is a pagan idea,
mm-hmm.
same kind of thing that went on in the Old Testament under Baalism. So that is an undercurrent. That's a religious undercurrent that provides passion to a lot of this hysteria. The second thing that we have to understand is what President Eisenhower, in his farewell speech in 1961, in that famous speech where he advocated watchfulness against the military-industrial complex. People don't read four paragraphs later in that 1961 farewell speech. He also warned about a potential incestuous agreement between scientists and politicians. What he said was, and very insightful, that science requires massive amounts of money. The only source of massive amounts of money is the government, the federal government. Therefore, you have a strange relationship that exists here. The scientists need money. The politicians need credibility. And so there's a tendency to get these things married together. And I think this is what has happened. It certainly has transformed meteorology and atmospheric science in the last 20 years. We've gone from small budgets, independent research, relatively independent research, and now it's all federally funded. You've got a massive number of people in universities, at federal laboratories, who are utterly dependent on the continued stream of money. And why that's corrupting or potentially corrupting is you have such things as the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. This is the fountainhead of a lot of this thinking. That very organization was founded to find human causes of climate change. Well, if you're funded to find human causes of climate change and you don't find that that's the only determinant, what happens to your funding?
It gets pulled.
And then finally, the third force besides the funding is the fact that globalists, the global politicians, are using climate for their own ends. For example, Omar Edenhofer, he's the co-chair of the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, said this, and I got a quote, "One must say clearly that we redistribute de facto the world's wealth by climate policy. One has to free oneself from the illusion that international climate policy is environmental policy. This has almost nothing to do with environmental policy anymore."
Well, that's pretty candid, where he is talking about it really doesn't have anything to do with weather or climate or any of these types of things. It basically has to do with control, doesn't it?
Yes. And that's the problem. And there are a lot of good-intentioned people. I'm not demeaning the intent, the ethical intent of these folks. I'm simply pointing to the fact that you've got corruptibility on a global scale. And it's very tempting to overlook the other scientific evidences and historic evidences that show there's a natural cause of climate change besides human. For example, today in the political discourse, you hear the word climate deniers. Trump is going to get climate deniers in his administration. I know of no one who is denying climate. We all believe in the climate. We all know the climate changes, and we all know that man has something to do with that climate change. That is not the debate, and that is a very phony approach that's being used, a propaganda approach, to divert attention and confuse people. The debate is not over climate change. The debate is over the relative causes of climate change between natural background and human influence on the climate. And to give perspective, let's remember that climate has always changed. There was the medieval warm period in which the population of Europe flourished. It grew by 50% because back in those days they had no refrigeration. Their health depended on nutrition of fresh food. They had longer growing seasons. They had 200 farms in Greenland. How many farms in Greenland today? You had a massive warming period. Then you went into a little ice age period. And we all remember that famous painting of George Washington crossing the Delaware with all the ice.
Right.
That doesn't happen today because that was the little ice age. And the climate's been warming since that. And here's the key. Here's the key that is never mentioned in public discourse. If climate changed by that much before fossil fuels were being used, what caused those changes? It could not have been CO2 emissions.
Well, I'm glad you cleared that up because we hear so often that the science is settled on this, and man-made global warming or changing of the climate through CO2 emissions is the major cause of what is taking place. And that just doesn't square with the data on it, like you were just pointing out. We do play some role, but the role that we play is minuscule, right, compared to the other elements.
Oh, yes. And the press and the media are largely responsible for this, and the political side. Remember, politicians want programs. And in order to sell the programs to the public, they want to give the public assurance that this is a sure thing. Mm. They are the ones that are saying this. If you go to the actual documents of the UN, they're very qualified. There's a very careful phraseology. They're not advocating an apocalypse. They're a lot less extreme than what you hear in the media. For example, in the media, they're always talking about 97% agreement. That's totally bogus.
Mm-hmm.
That came out of a paper that was poor methodology. And in fact, the people that are the key scientists themselves who believe in human-caused global warming say that's an extreme statement. It does.
Hmm. And yet, like you say, the news puts this out as being settled science. There were these outrageous claims that were made by some of the more, not necessarily the scientists, but some of the spokesmen of this, like an Al Gore or so forth, that put out these outrageous claims that parts of the United States would be completely underwater by now. And that was it. You know, we'd never see another polar bear again and things like these types of statements. But nobody seems to hold them accountable when these things don't take place. And oftentimes not even don't take place, but that the effect that they were talking about was completely reversed.
Yeah. There's another film out by the people who deny that human beings are the ultimate cause. A sort of a video. I'm not sure where it's available, but I've heard about it. I haven't seen it. It's called Climate Hustle,
mm-hmm.
and it's an answer to Gore's inconvenient truth. Gore couldn't even find natural areas where he was filming. Some of that film was just video editing, and in fact, when Gore's film was shown in the United Kingdom, there were so many parents that became upset by the frightening nightmares their children had after seeing that film, that there was a court in England that required the English schools to, before they showed that film in public classrooms, to qualify it by saying this is a political opinion film, not solid science.
Yeah.
But here in the United States, the Department of Education didn't see fit to protect students from this kind of abuse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the key term there, too, being that it's a political film that's there. Like you were pointing out, your three points were very helpful, the idea of the religious component. And I was thinking you gave the example of seeing some students that were bowing down, tree huggers and worshiping, the planet itself and items on the planet and so forth. That's obvious. But there's a lot of people that worship really without, actually physically bowing down, right? They have in their mind that a pristine environment is what is that we need to have. And anything that disrupts a pristine environment is evil and something that needs to be fought against. Kind of, we see this in some of the films that come out too, some of the Disney films and so forth, kind of have that viewpoint to it, that everything needs to be pristine. So they don't allow for any use of the earth at all.
Well, they're biblically ignorant. Think back to Genesis chapter 1 and 2. Now, Genesis chapter 1 has always been a sore point with environmentalism. In fact, a friend of mine, Mark Musser, wrote a book called Nazi Oaks, in which he traced for 100 years the hatred against the Jewish book of Genesis because of its subduing the earth in Genesis chapter 1, 26, 27, 28. And that became a source of anti-Semitism and developed under the Nazi regime. They were hating this because they said that man was told in Christianity to subdue, meaning rape, the environment and wreck it. Well, unfortunately for these people, apparently, they never read Genesis chapter 2. And in Genesis chapter 2, what does God do to the environment to set it for man? He plants a garden.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of that garden, it was all wilderness. So now, what do you want environmentally? Do you want to have a pristine, untouched environment, which would be wilderness, or do you want to bring nature into its full productivity, which is a garden?
Mm.
God gave us the example in Genesis chapter 2.
Mm-hmm. You know, in my own experience, too, before I knew much about what was taking place in all this hyper-environmentalism and radical environmentalism that's taking place, I was an IT manager for a company, and I was in charge then of purchasing a lot of the paper that we used in various printers around the company and so forth. And so we buy pallets and pallets of paper. And so the movement came out about buying recycled paper. And so pressure was put on us as a company to do that. So I researched it a little bit. And as I was talking to some of the people involved in the paper industry, I discovered a couple of things. One, they were telling me that the chemicals that were used in order to make recycled paper, to strip the ink out of the old paper and so forth and put it in a form that they could then reuse it, those chemicals were more detrimental to the environment than the actual paper was, that if they just scrapped the paper and started fresh again. And second, they told me that they were the leading people that were involved in planting new trees, that they had understood that there was a limited amount of resources for them to use, i.e. trees, in making their product. So when they would harvest the trees, they would go back and then replant huge tracts of, literally millions of trees that they were planting. And all this was now going to be endangered because of this whole movement about recycled paper, which they were saying was, if you want to buy it, that we'll provide it to you. It'll cost you more, and it's actually going to end up being worse for the environment, but we'll be happy to do it for you.
Well, that's true, and that's a good example. There's two factors in what you brought up. One is that CO2 levels, as they have increased in the 20th century, have led to a greening up on the earth that is observable by satellite. There is vegetation growing now where there wasn't vegetation 200 years ago, like on the borders of the Sahara Desert and so on. And it's objective. It's simply observable from the satellites. That's because CO2 is plant food. It is not a pollutant. CO2 feeds the lowest level of life on Earth, because all animal life depends on plant life, and plant life depends on carbon dioxide. So we can get rid of this idea that carbon dioxide is some sort of a pollutant. Second thing is, you were absolutely right, the timber industry, because of its own economic interests, did take care of the forests. So then the environmentalists come along, as they did in Colorado, and ban periodic burning, the clearance burning. So then what happens? You have all this fuel that builds up, and now when you have a forest fire, it destroys the whole forest because it wasn't taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have Siskiyou County, California, where they chained college students to the trees to stop the cutting down of trees by the timber industry. They destroyed the timber industry in Siskiyou County, and it was all done in the name of helping the spotted owl. Well, the spotted owl population since then has continued to decline, and the reason is now the forests are so dense that the spotted owl with a 6-foot wingspan can't fly in to feed on the mice.
Oh, boy.
This is an example of people emotionally up. See, this is worship nature thing. People get so wrapped up emotionally, they don't think, and they don't have planned care for the environment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all these unintended consequences. We're the government. We're here to help you. They get involved in these types of things. And then, like you say, now that it actually, like the wind farm, same deal with the with the birds of prey, the eagles and so forth. It was killing hundreds of thousands of them because they were flying into all of these wind farms that they put up, and they never thought about it. These are the same people that worship the birds of flight there, or birds of prey. As much as they worship the rest of the environment, here they were responsible for killing more of them than any sort of climate change ever killed. Let me ask you one more question on this, if I could. They're talking about hiding all this data. Is all the data so important rather than the observable facts that you pointed out just a few moments ago? Is it more important to them because basically, their conclusions are based upon, it's not based upon, you know, just observable facts and so forth. They're plugging everything into a model. And so if they don't have all their data that they've gathered to plug into the model, it's going to come out with a different solution.
Well, all their models are running too hot. For the past 15 years, if you take a plot of the models, then there's dozens and dozens of different climate models. But as a statistic, the group of these dozens of climate models are all over-predicting the warming, and that against data. And it's two categories of data. There's the surface data, and then there's the satellite data. And both data sets do not agree with the models. So I think it's also ironic in the article you're cited out of the Washington Post, if they were concerned, they ought to start burying the models, not the data.
Mm-hmm. Good point. Well, Charles Clough, thank you so much for joining us today to talk about some of the issues that are here in this article and just about the entire topic altogether. We really appreciate the work that you're doing and the work there at the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation. It's really been helpful to help us to think through, and in many cases, think biblically about what is taking place. And we really appreciate the work that you guys are doing.
All right. Thank you.
All righty. That was Charles Clough, as I mentioned, and he works as a fellow for the Cornwall Alliance. I gave his bio there at the beginning of the broadcast, and you can go out there to find out more about him. Go out to the Cornwall Alliance website. That's www.cornwallalliance.org, cornwallalliance.org. Out there, if you type in their search engine, Charles Clough, you'll be able to see then some of the articles that he has written about climate issues out on their website.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org.